Bring us in.
Oh, said Edmund in a voice which made everyone stop talking and listen to him. I've just seen it all, he said.
Seen what? Asked Peter.
Why, the whole thing, said Edmund. You know what we were puzzling about last night? That if it was only a year ago since we left Narnia, but everything looks as if no one had lived in Cair Paravel for hundreds of years. Well, don't you see? You know that however long we seem to have lived in Narnia, when we got back through the wardrobe, it seemed to have taken no time at all.
Go on, said Susan. I think I'm beginning to understand.
And that means, continued Edmund, that once you're out of Narnia, you have no idea how Narnian time is going. Why shouldn't hundreds of years have passed and gone past in Narnia while 1 year has passed for us in England?
By Jove, Ed, said Peter, I believe you've got it.
By Jove, welcome to my sacred fellowship. This is episode 171, where your hosts, Catherine Olsen and Lorianne Schwenk, are discussing chapter 3 of Prince Caspian through the theme of mystery. We are using traditional, ancient, and diverse sacred practices to discern everyday themes in the world of Narnia. We are using these stories to learn, to reflect on our lives, and to think about life's big questions.
Take a seat in this little boat or settle in your car and join us. Reading in community is an essential part of what it means for us to treat a text as sacred, and we're glad you're here to continue building fellowship with us. We believe that by finding the sacred in these writings of Lewis, we will learn to treat one another as sacred. Hello, Catherine. How are you this
Hello
weekend?
there. I am foot sore, but not a terribly in a bad mood for today. I had a good day at church.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm good. Had a good morning at church as well, and then I got to have a nap, so it's been nice. I mean, nothing like a gorgeous blue sunny day to spend in bed, but oh well, I needed the rest. Do you have a dungeon or a tower for us this week?
No, I think my tower is that I just took 10 miles out of a, well, you don't exactly take a time of 10 time miles, you take a distance of it, but I, after getting home from church and choir, I went on a walk for 10 miles and quite enjoyed some spring sunshine and all of the daffodils blooming and things like that. And I am now back and don't have to walk that far for another couple of weeks, but
Do
I really enjoyed that.
you want to tell
And,
people what you're preparing for?
yes, I am going to be walking the length of the Boston Marathon in October for the Jimmy Funds Cancer Fund research. And that is 26.2 miles. And I will hopefully be doing that without getting any injuries.
That's fantastic. And hopefully we'll have a link to your campaign to do that. That would be exciting. So.
And my dungeon is kind of mixed thing because as I mentioned to you earlier this week, I had two funerals to attend yesterday. One I already knew about, and then one person passed away, or I found out about it right after we finished recording last week. But my gosh, they were such lovely moments of celebrating the people we knew, and it was a sad day, but it was a very good, heartwarming reminder of the people I've lost. How about you?
I think for me, the dungeon is just that I haven't felt all that great, and so there were a lot of things going on in my town today. And I had volunteered for things. I had offered to help with setup. I'd offered to do a lot of things. And in the end, I just ended up not doing any of it. And it's just frustrating right now. And till I figure things out, I don't know what the answer is and all that. But I just realized I have got to corral my energy, and I just could not have done all the things that I normally would do. So I kind of miss feeling normal. So there's that. And then the thing I did get to do today is in my church, this was called Good Shepherd Sunday. So Catholics and Episcopalians all read about Jesus as the Good Shepherd. And of course, there's the reading of Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. And I knew I wanted to sing some special music. So I'd been looking and looking and looking and enjoying finding different settings of Psalm 23 and was having a really good time. And then up comes this brand new hymn just written that not only acknowledges the liturgical texts for the day, but the fact that this is Earth Day, because the churches that I go to also believe we are called to care for creation, that is part of our work of tikkun olam, to just throw in a Jewish term there, to making the world a better place, that we are called to do that, all of us. And so I was so happy to find something that combined both themes of the shepherd and flock and caring for the planet. So, and today is John Muir's birthday, the day we're recording. So, those were my towers so far for
And
today.
that reminds me, I walked by St. John's Episcopal Church on the way home.
The one in Billerica, or
This was on the border with Lowell.
okay, yes. 20 years ago, I could have told you who the priest was. Now I'm not sure. Wonderful. Oh, good. Well, and the Gammers have some fruitful stuff this week.
Yes, quite a lot of
Quite
it.
a lot of it. Actually, we'll start with some fish. I was very curious about pavender and was really hoping to find out that that was a real world fish, or perhaps a name for a real world fish. But this is a creation from the world of Narnia and is a rainbow colored saltwater fish. So I was pleased to find that. Now we know what pavenders are. Though, of course, when I looked it up, my search engine was sure I meant lavender.
Of course.
No, I really meant lavender. I guess I should go right to the Narnia wiki in the future. But and then going to our theme of mystery for this chapter, again, we have an early 14th century word. I'm going to have to look and see. There must be some book about what happened that around the end of the 1300s to about 1500 that language kind of settled. I just love that. Mystery in a theological sense, a religious truth via divine revelation, hidden spiritual significance, mystical truth. And so I'm just lingering on those as fascinating, because of the sense of mystery is something that gets revealed before we know it, as it were. So I want to start with that. But then, fellow Gammer, could you start off something about our word Jove?
Well, I will after having to quote my favorite part of Handel's Messiah, which is the "Behold, I tell you a mystery, we shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment at the twinkling of an eye at the last trumpet." That
Well, the words
is
are
my
by
favorite use
Paul.
of the word mystery.
God, love it.
And I
Love it,
won't
love it.
subject you to the aria that follows.
No, neither of us are going to do that. But yes, great words, great words.
So for Jove, in a few of his books, Lewis encourages people to look at the sky with a medieval perspective. The earth is in the center of everything, with seven planets, heaven spheres surrounding the earth, the moon, Mercury, Venus, the sun, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. During Lewis's time, Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto were not discovered, so the sun and moon aren't included. And these seven heavens also influence the days of the week. Many people forgot this medieval literature and cosmos. And you mentioned that this is from Ward. Is this the BYU, not a lecture, but a study that you sent me?
This was an interview by somebody from BYU who was interviewing a Lewis scholar. So I'm not sure who Ward is, but I was very intrigued by this. And Ward goes on to say that the characteristics of the planets seem to me to have a permanent value of spiritual symbols. Oh, that was actually a quote from Lewis. Sorry, Ward quoting Lewis. And he was fascinated with it. So in Narnia, he uses all of those symbols for each book. And so I've made a note of that in my own copy of it. And the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is built on the symbol of Jupiter, also known as Jove. Right. Could you quote Lewis's poem, please?
Yes. Ward discovered this while reading The Planets, a poem by Lewis. of wrath ended and woes mended, of winter past and guilt forgiven, and good fortune Jove is master. And it says that the red eye of Jupiter is equated with the wound in Christ's side.
Right. And so he's saying that this little poem is essentially the plot of Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. And so this book, Prince Caspian, I believe, is Aries, is Mars, because there is war, so much war in the
Yes, it's a
book.
very
So.
bellicose plot.
It was funny because I was trying to find critical reviews of the book. I was really, really, really trying to find reviews of the book of Prince Caspian. And all I could find were reviews of the movie, and they're complaining it was too warlike. Okay. All right. I mean, there are, I mean, we haven't, yeah, but anyway.
On the other hand, it's never a bad thing to find something from BYU. Go Cougars.
Go Cougars. Right. Exactly. And then I think it's my turn to tell a story. So our theme is mystery. And I'm reading a book right now, and I think it's called Too Big for a Single Mind. And it's all about the appearance of quantum physics. And I'm going to put it that way, because in some ways it was a mystery. There were people like Marie Curie, Max Planck, who were aware that something was off, the way certain things behaved didn't fit with what they knew. Meanwhile, there were other physicists who thought that everything was known about physics. There was no point in going into the field because everything had been discovered. And so what I'm seeing in, I am not a physicist, but well, as the big discovery is that light can behave as a wave and a particle. And that for some of these scientists, this kind of came to them as a revelation. It was before the math. So they had to find the math or the mathematician in some cases. They couldn't even do the math, some of them, to find the way to prove that. And Einstein was one who could do both. He kind of had that intuitive sense as well as the mathematics sense, but someone like Niels Bohr, he always clung to the wave theory and did not want the particle theory. But he also he could sense, say, what say the next element on the periodic table would have to be. So again, these people are not necessarily discovering something, figuring out what it is, and presenting it. They are having this revealed to them somehow. And it really starts to sound a bit like the language of mystics, because the best thing about it is as they discover something new, a whole new bunch of mystery is revealed. A whole new bunch of what we don't know seems to come up. And so all those people who thought physics was a closed book, done, they're just dust in their graves now. And we're still talking about the other people as we continue to explore. And I was going to try to talk about waves and particles, and I found a children's website explaining it. And so here is
Maybe
this
that's on my level.
thing, right? But here's this thing, that was unknown 150 years ago. We didn't even know there were atoms 150 years ago. We had a theory there were atoms, but we didn't know what they were and how they were made, And now you can find, stuff that a 10-year-old could understand with Max Planck's constant and all these equations, and discussions of the wave and particle and all of that. And I'm leaving that website open for a while so that I can understand it better. But I just really want to recommend this book, and I'll put a link in their notes. Too Big for a Single Mind, and the author's last name is spelled Herter, H-U with an umlaut, Herter,
Your turn.
Herter, but umlaut over the U. So it's fascinating, fascinating. I can't put it down. As soon as we're done recording, I'm back to it. So let's go.
Stop dilly-dallying about all this Narnian stuff and get to the Niels Bohr of it
Let me
all.
go back to Niels Bohr. So, Where do we find our theme in the chapter? Do you want to start this week?
Oh, it looks like I took until the fourth sentence of the chapter to find something. It says, when Lucy had said truly enough that it was a glorious morning, there did not seem to be anything else nice to be said. Edmund said that what everyone was feeling, we've simply got to get off this island. And for me, that mystery right there is that they have a limited understanding of what makes it a good situation, and so they have this compulsion to discover something else.
And of course, it's a mystery of how they're going to get off the island at this point. So there's that. But I just want to tip my hat to Lucy for seeing that it's a glorious morning. Maybe she's so young that it doesn't hurt her back to lie on the ground. But I think when I was Lucy's age, I'd be crying because I was hungry and scared because I didn't know where I was and things like that. So hooray for Lucy. She came home as our last theme was. Good.
What about you?
Think for me next is Peter's concern about swimming to the mainland because water is kind of a mystery to at least Edmund and Lucy. And Susan's won prizes for it at school, but the rest of them, and then this is also not a pool or even a lake. This is open, well, this is salt water, sea, and there could be currents. We don't know how deep it is. So there's water being a mystery is a great metaphor for so many things, but here it is very simply. And of course, there could be critters in it that doesn't say that, but I mean, the water is a great mystery.
I was just walking by the river and I'm thinking there must have been tons of insects by this r water right now. But for me, there's the question of how do they retain their grown-up status in Narnia, not a matter of rank, but the issue of this says, but Peter, said Lucy, look here, I know I can't swim for nuts at home, in England, I mean, but couldn't we all swim long ago if it was long ago when we were kings and kings in Narnia? We could ride then too and do all sorts of things, don't you think? Ah, but we were sort of grown up then, said Peter. We reigned for years and years and learned to do things. Aren't we just back at our proper ages again now?
I love that. And the mystery is that they know they have a skill, but it's only a memory. And to me, this is part of that ontological change that I was struggling to find that word for last week, where as they re-Narnia themselves, these skills are going to come back so that they're not just a memory in their minds, but a flesh memory, a muscle memory. That these skills will be there. So that's what I'm thinking. But I'm not sure.
Oddly enough, that reminds me of a quote from, I believe, the person who said it was Ezra Taft Benson from the back in the 1980s. But the quote is that a testimony is found in the bearing of it. And so for me, how that applies to this is that a skill or a remembered achievement is only to be found if you test it out for yourself.
But then that makes me sad because I think about when we're older, we won't be able to test it out anymore, but we can tell people, oh, I used to play violin, or I used to be able to sing, or I used to be able to walk 10 miles, when maybe at some point we won't be able to anymore. We won't get to test that anymore. So I'm not sure I quite agree with that. I think the memory has its own reality as well.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder if Narnia. I feel as though Narnia is one of, well, it's not exactly a magical land where things just go right, but it is a place where there is some suspension of disbelief.
Yes.
So it
I'm
is
going to call it
entirely possible
ontological change.
that
You call it
some of these
suspension of
five,
disbelief.
yes.
Good. Now I've got a note in my margin. I haven't the faintest idea Oh, I know. Well, because all of this reminds me of Doctor Who, of course.
Of course.
Who watched three episodes last night because she was home alone?
Oh, I'm jealous.
Edmund continues puzzling about this time thing, and so I have in my margin WWTW.
W.
Don't even say it out loud. If you don't know what it is, watch Doctor Who. Just watch,
Doesn't
don't
it
blink.
mean what would Time Lords watch? Something.
So yes, WWTW. So Edmund's figured out that nature of things.
On the other hand, now that you brought in a different fandom, the whole "we can do it because we already knew we could do it" reminds me of Harry casting the Patronus in book three because he had already witnessed himself casting the Patronus.
Don't think about it too much.
Yeah.
And so my next is something was happening. So a mystery begins to unfold. This is just a few sentences after, though, of course, we've skipped over Peter saying, "By Jove," just his thing. So a boat has appeared and it's clearing the point and it's coming along the channel towards them, and they seem to be holding something that's alive. They seem to be armed and all of this. So this mystery is starting to unfold and begin to reveal itself to them in this paragraph here. And then we get to a mystery that I don't understand
Do tell.
because a soldier is struck by an arrow. Fall drops his bundle, falls over the water, and then floundered to the far bank. And so did the other person. And so we know something now about this channel. It's not that deep if adult humans can walk it. And maybe this is low tide too, but I'm puzzled that they can walk it. I had thought that this would be deep enough. I didn't think they could just run away. I don't know why they're even bringing this bundle in a boat. Why didn't they just carry him?
For me, it makes perfect sense. They probably came from a place where it is impossible to stand in the water and to navigate it without a boat. And so they are probably, if it's not a matter of they started from that place, it might be that they have experience with these lands and know that it can vary greatly. I mean, they have kind of these legends about the nature of this area, and so they might think it to be a treacherous place, even if they discover that they can stand in it.
Right. And they might want to make sure they can get away faster than something on foot. So I get it. But they're armored. I mean, they're wearing, mail and stuff, steel caps on their, that would be a disaster if they were underwater. So I was just surprised that they could just run right back. So Peter and Susan are smart and grab the boat. Good for them. And then they release this dwarf, and they are a mystery to the dwarf. That was my next thing.
That was my next thing as well. Whatever they say, you don't feel like ghosts.
Right. And
The whole
of
thing
course,
with the
ghosts
voice,
are a
you can do
mystery.
ghosts.
I'm sorry, what did
Sorry.
you say?
I was going to say, he then goes on, or at least he says, but why should we be ghosts? And then the dwarf responds that the woods are as full of ghosts as they are of trees. And that when they want to, then they usually bring him to here and say they'll leave him to the ghosts.
They were more
I
frightened of taking me
personally
to my
have
death
missed
than I was of
them.
going.
Sorry,
Sorry.
what?
Oh, I was just, his sentence, they were more frightened of taking me to my death than I was of going.
Yes.
So, yeah.
On the other hand, I wonder if there are people who have been left to the ghosts and have found a very quite happy afterlife because of the Killorman not being brave enough to actually do the evil deed.
Maybe, right. Well, especially if they can just walk back to the mainland. So I'm just anyway. All right. What was next for you?
So for me, it is when did they further surprise the dwarf? They say that he says, "No, what we want next is some firewood. We've got it, some up at the castle," said Edmund. The dwarf gave a low whistle. "Beards and bedsteads," he said, "though, so there really is a castle after all."
Ah.
So he has, is it, oh, I swear it's one of the sons of Denethor, but I can't remember if it's Boromir or Faramir who says, so, oh no, it's one of the Rohirrim who says that do legends walk among us now
Yes.
when he discovers that there are hobbits and dwarves and such things roaming abroad.
Right. Just got through that chapter, so yes, you're right. The three hunters meeting the Rohirrim. Exactly. And like you said, and who on earth, the dwarf began, but then broke off and said, "No matter, breakfast first." And so he wants to know who they are, but he's willing to suspend that mystery for a while. But he's still not entirely sure he's alive. Are we all ghosts now? So.
Well, I think an excellent way to test if you're a ghost is to see if you can eat something, and if so, you're probably not dead.
Right. Well, and that is the resurrection appearance in Luke, where they're in the
He eats some
room
of
and
fish.
Jesus says, "Give me some fish. I'll eat it. Look, I'm really eating this thing." So, I don't know how much of this Lewis was thinking of, or if it's just because it's by the sea that he's got fish, but I'm attuned to those things. Oh. So I like how people eat before they tell stories. I don't do that. I can't imagine a quiet dinner. I love a dinner full of conversation and chatter while we're eating, but I love this idea, and Tolkien has that too, that people eat first, and even if they're going to smoke, they're going to smoke first and then. So I like that they can hold a space for mystery. They don't need the answers before they have their fish and their pipe. So I
Well, it
appreciate
really
that.
goes back to kind of the ancient Greek good guest host relationship rules and the idea that you provide for the physical needs before expecting anyone to give more than that.
Nice. Right.
And of course, that was partially based on the idea that you might be hosting a god but be unawares of it.
Right. Well, that was hospitality everywhere. Yeah. And so now we get these mysteries where we hear about Telmarines and old Narnians and some kind of rebellion going on. And so we get these little hints of what mystery is going to unfold for us moving forward. And so that was where I wrapped up.
I'll see. I have this part at the end where it says, "So the dwarf settled down and told his tale. I shall not give you it to you in his words, putting in all the children's questions and interruptions, because it would take too long and be confusing, and even so, it would leave out certain points that the children only heard later." And so this is the author leaving some things as a mystery, but also understanding that all tales have to be drawn out beyond the original intent of the accounting.
Right. Oh, I like that. Very good. Starts and ends with some mystery. Boy, we're good at picking themes. And did you see flowers on your walk today?
Yes, I mentioned the daffodils.
Right. So you'd also mentioned to me before we started that you were going to lead our sacred practice and lead Florilegia.
Yes, which has such a wonderful word for flowers in it.
Right. Could you
So,
explain to me again, as well as to our listeners, how that works?
well, as I understand it, it is that we are going through the chapter and picking up something as we would pluck a flower, and it's something that will sparkle up at us, and we put the things that are to occur to us in conversation with each other.
Okay.
So I have found a phrase, and you have as well.
All right, I'll read mine, and why don't we read ours and then say where they are from? So mine is, she would not have liked anyone to think she could miss at such a short range. And this is Susan explaining that she wasn't trying to kill the soldier, that she had absolutely hit her target.
And I have Edmund, who says, "I've just seen it all," he said. This is right before he exposits the entire thing about the WWTW thingamajig.
Okay. So I'll read them first. I'll read mine first and your second, and then let's see, how do they speak to each other outside of this chapter? What do they say to each other? She would not have liked anyone to think she could miss at such a short range. I've just seen it all, he said. I've
I
seen
kind
her.
of heard
Oh, go ahead.
a reassurance from Edmund that he is not having a narrow view or taking things at face value. He has seen it all, and so he will consider it all.
What I see with both of these together is two people in two sentences about understanding. And so one is trying to make sure she's understood, and the other has achieved an understanding. So in a way, when I see I've just seen it all after her sentence, it's as though he's just seen her whole motive in the way she aimed and fired her bow. Something like that. Could you read them in the other direction for us and see what sparkles?
I've just seen it all, he said. She would not have liked anyone to think she could miss at such a short range.
I hear there here in this rearrangement, two people who are proud of what they can do. One of them has this kind of physical skill, and the other has some kind of understanding. And there's no shame in saying how good you are at something. And so that comes to me.
On the other hand, I feel like there is no shame as well in asking to hear the perspective of someone else. So communication of need is a good thing.
Yes.
Any
And
of the other things occur to you?
then, well, just seeing, like me and my ontological change thing that I'm gonna beat till it's fully beaten. Clearly Susan's skills are coming back. I don't know if she's doing archery all the time in England, but she's really good. This is Narnia Susan here, and she's back. And so I think what I'm also seeing is people who are planted. They've come home, as we talked about last chapter. They are comfortable where they are. They understand where they are, as Edmund is saying, and their skills that come to them when they're there have returned. So I love that. Is there anything that occurs to you to take with you from these two phrases? Anything that will sparkle for you outside of the book?
I feel as though it's drawing my attention to look for wider possibilities when I'm considering a subject.
Yeah.
How about for you?
Oh, I think so too. I think so as well. And also, the necessity for me of community. I mean, we hear each other, understand each other, hopefully, of when we clarify things to another, they become more clear to us, I think. And so, I mean, old Edmund might have had his realization about time and just kept it to himself, and used it against his siblings at some point. But now he knows he must share it with his siblings. And so that's kind of what I'm seeing. And then I see Susan is starting to re-grasp her leadership, her that she is a powerful queen who is not someone who just sits on a throne, but is an active active person acting in her story.
Nice.
So I want to take those things with me. Community, being in community, which is interesting because our next chapter is alienation, or that's our theme.
Yes.
And how terrible it is to be alone. We'll get to that, won't we, in our next episode. The Dwarf Tales of Prince Caspian.
And we love hearing from you, and our community is growing stronger every day. If you'd like to join our Facebook community, look for A Sacred Fellowship. Find us on Instagram at A Sacred Fellowship. You can also send an email to asacredfellowship@gmail.com. Thanks to all of you for keeping our spirits up and our thoughts flowing, or
Yeah.
our thoughts up and our spirits flowing, either way.
Sure.
Please read and comment on our second breakfast at our website, www.asacredfellowship.com.
And we also value the contributions of our Patreon supporters. Your support of the site and hosting costs is much appreciated. If you feel inspired to join their ranks, please look at our options on www.patreon.com/asacredfellowship. Perks have ranged from patron shoutouts to literary themed presents, and we do appreciate every dollar.
And we do have a special something that we managed to snatch from Mrs. McCready's hands, or the person who sent it on to the school, which is to say, this is almost a habitual thing that's happening, and I'm not complaining at all because I'm just delighted every time it happens. Philip has reached out again. He says, "Hi, all. Margarine was a butter substitute important to England during the time of rationing all the way in other 1960s. I remember my mother recounting that you could get butter, but you could get twice as much margarine with your rationing coupons. Her family tended to get butter and scrimp on it a bit. Her father was a master grocer, which I think meant he was fluent in the art of home economics and could guide customers to provision themselves, including how to accommodate the consequences of indulging in certain items like butter or chocolate. In my readings of the books, I have not wondered so much about Susan's doubt in both of these books. I am now wondering if this is a foreshadowing of the events in the last battle, or if it surprised Lewis when he got to writing that last book. Part of Lewis's theology is that being Christian is a constant choice for God. At any point, and often as part of our sinful nature, we don't make that choice. Part of the good news is that God is always ready to accept our choice for God, but we need practice making that choice. Susan keeps falling out of that practice. Lorian's statement about Susan, yeah, I'm tripping over things today. Lorian's statement about Susan believing that their time in Narnia had been a fairy tale game they played when they were young is nearly a quote from The Last Battle. From Pardaes, take in the text versus receive. I believe you had a discussion of taking versus receiving gifts in the Fellowship of the Ring. Receiving was humble and taking was arrogant. In this case, though, they had already humbly received the gifts. Now they are actively taking them for the purpose they were given, to defend Narnia. This reminds me of Paul exhorting the Ephesians to don the armor of God and battle evil with truth, readiness, righteous faith, and the word of God. Thanks, Phil."
Yes,
I
thank
just
you.
walked, in addition, I walked past a lot of churches today, but one of them was the Armor of God Baptist Ministry, so I enjoyed that name of a church.
Oh, wow, wonderful. Helmet of righteousness, the breastplate of I forget them all. I'll have to look it up. All right. It'll be in the notes.
There's a Andy song that we have quoted before for that.
Right. Well, wonderful. So thank you all, eager for your comments, all of your comments. And in closing, from C.S. Lewis himself, our life comes to us moment by moment. One moment disappears before the next comes along, and there is room for very little in each. That is what time, with a capital T, is like. And of course, you and I tend to take it for granted that this time series, this arrangement of past, present, and future, is not simply the way life comes to us, but the way all things really exist.
We tend to assume that the whole universe and God are always moving on from past to future, just as we do. But many learned people do not agree with that. Almost certainly, God is not in time. God's life does not consist of moments following one another. Namarie.
Maria.